Good morning. Just to start out, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors who are not able to be here at the conference with me, unfortunately. Cecilia Capello, who is from Enfants du Monde as well at, in Geneva. Tene Sankara, who is from Enfants du Monde's field office in Burkina Faso. Annie Portella from the World Health Organization's Department of Maternal, Newborn, Child, and Adolescent Health. Charlotte Fillon, also from Enfants du Monde, and Carlos Santarelli, OC, also, sorry, not French. To begin, I have no relationships to disclose, and just in the interest of time, I'm going to kind of go quickly through the slides. I don't know what the knowledge is in this room about maternal mortality and neonatal mortality, but the most recent estimates from WHO are that 358,000 women die annually due to causes related to pregnancy and childbirth. And this is an improvement from the estimates from before, which were over 500,000 women dying. Some of that is due to changes in the estimate way of their estimating things, and also some real decline, which is exciting. However, the distribution of these deaths has not changed at all. 99% of maternal deaths occur in low and middle income countries. And we know that most maternal deaths are avoidable. And so really this exhibits a huge social injustice. Very few women comparatively die due to causes related to pregnancy and birth in developed countries. And WHO has also said that this is the health indicator that shows the greatest disparity between developed and developing countries. Over the past decade, the situation of maternal health within a rights context has really started to gain traction. And already in 2001, WHO recognized that the failure to address preventable maternal disability and death represents one of the greatest social injustices of our time. And then more recently, in 2010, the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner on Human Rights issued an historic statement denouncing preventable maternal mortality and morbidity as violations of women's rights to health, life, education, dignity, and information, among other rights. And then just a couple months ago, the UN Human Rights Council actually adopted a resolution on preventable maternal mortality and morbidity. So this is exciting in that it really puts the pressure on member states to look at this as a human rights issue and to really make all the efforts that they can to help women achieve the right to experience pregnancy and childbirth safely. So sub-Saharan Africa suffers by far the greatest burden of maternal mortality in the world, and neonatal mortality as well. Burkina Faso is, I should have put a map of Africa because I think when you're working there you forget that not everybody knows exactly where it is, but it's located in West Africa just north of Ghana. And so the maternal mortality ratio there is 560 per 100,000 live births, and the newborn mortality rate is 38 per 1,000 live births, as you can see. There has been a reduction since 1990, which is which is the benchmark for the Millennium Development Goals. Initially in 1990, it was 770 per 100,000 live births, but the target is 190. So by 2015, the MDG target, the Millennium Development Goal target, which is to reduce maternal mortality by 75% by 2015, is 190. And Burkina Faso is not on track to reach that. They're very far from being on track to reaching this Millennium Development Goal target. So the specific district that we are working in is Tankadogo District, and you can see on the map where it is. And we don't have accurate mortality data. As it is in a developing country, it's hard to get that data a lot of times. But we know that only 65.3% of births are attended by a skilled birth attendant, and just over 20% of women have 4 antenatal care visits during their pregnancy. So this does represent a huge area that where improvement can be made. However, there's a lot of things that contribute to maternal mortality and morbidity. In 2004, just for a little bit of background, the African region developed a roadmap for accelerating the reduction of maternal mortality and morbidity to reach the Millennium Development Goals. And at that time, the WHO office really strongly suggested that all African countries develop their personal national roadmap to really define how they can accelerate the reduction of maternal mortality and morbidity. And so Burkina Faso did this in 2006, and as a central component of their roadmap, they have included the World Health Organization framework for working with individuals and families and communities to improve maternal and newborn health. And this is a framework that is used to mobilize communities to overcome demand-side barriers to health services access and to help communities really identify the resources that they can use to improve maternal and newborn health. There is a strong focus also on community participation throughout all program phases, and so communities really are, they're the drivers of the framework. They are the ones who decide what priorities they want to focus on. They work to develop solutions, and then we help them to implement the solutions that they have chosen. So initially in the planning portion of the program, we conduct participatory community assessments, which take place all over the place, to identify and prioritize the needs that they wish to address. These assessments are done by conducting 5 roundtable discussions, one with pregnant women or women having given birth within the previous year. Husbands or partners of women with these characteristics, they may or may not be the husbands of the women that participated, influential family members of women with these characteristics, and then community leaders and healthcare providers. And following these roundtable discussions, there is an institutional forum in which representatives from each discussion come together with development partners and religious, cultural, and political and other authorities. And then together they really decide which needs that they want to prioritize and how they want to address the needs and challenges. So there were some very important needs that came out during this participatory community assessment. And this really highlighted the things that are keeping women from exercising their rights related to maternal and newborn health. First of all, women and families are not aware that a woman has the right to seek and demand maternal and newborn health services. And so without this knowledge, they have a very difficult time doing that, especially as women have very low decision-making ability within the culture. They rely on men to make these decisions for them, and they're also economically dependent on men. They don't have a lot of control over the economic resources of the family. And I just have a couple quotes here from participants that really capture this. So one spouse said, "Among certain people, if a woman goes to the health center without the consent of her husband, it is because she does not respect him and it becomes a source of conflict." And a community leader said, "When a woman decides to seek a consultation at the health center without asking her husband, it is because the baby is not his." So it seemed like, those really show the challenges that women face. Especially if there's stigma attached to a woman seeking health services on her own when she needs those services, that's a major problem. Also, women and families are overwhelmingly not satisfied with the health services that they receive. And for example, community members feel that there are not a sufficient number of healthcare providers and health centers to provide services. They mentioned a lack of supplies and as well as a lack of privacy. Some community members mentioned that the births take place in the same area as all other services in the health center, which certainly is not very comfortable for a woman giving birth. One spouse said, "Health services are not always available in health centers. You can go to the health center several times and have them tell you to come back another time because the provider is not there." This is especially disappointing for them, as there are so many barriers to actually reaching the service in the first place. They don't have reliable transportation. There's no public transportation. And so they have to find some way to get there, and it's very difficult. Also, they have to have the resources to pay for these services, so they've made efforts to secure sufficient money to pay for these services. And so when they get there and the quality is low or they can't even receive the services, it's very disappointing. Another major problem was the interactions with healthcare providers. Many community members mentioned having negative experience with health care providers, including poor reception at health services, and even reports of verbal and physical mistreatment. One woman said, healthcare providers often say, you are dirty. And another woman said, sometimes when you go to a health center for a consultation and he judges that your condition is not serious, there are certain ones that insult you and yell at you. So obviously this is a very complex issue. Like I mentioned before, there aren't enough health providers in facilities. So obviously the ones who are there are overworked, they're very stressed. And so there's problems in that area. But in any case, the important thing is that this needs to be addressed, or else women aren't going to seek the services even when they need them, or at least they're going to be dissuaded to do so unless they're desperate, which is not when you want a pregnant woman seeking services. So in response to these needs, the community worked to define objectives, primary objectives that they wanted to address, and then the solutions that they had in mind and the activities that they envisioned that could improve the situation. So first the community decided that they wanted to increase awareness of women's rights related to maternal and newborn health. And they identified a few ways in which they could do this. And the first is including maternal rights themes into ongoing education programs, including the literacy and informal education program of Burkina Faso. So this is very useful, as these education programs already have a lot of legitimacy, and so adding this component can reach a lot of people and do so effectively. In addition, they are planning education sessions, theatrical performances, film projections, and radio spots on maternal and newborn health rights. And also, they're using community representatives. They're training them, and then they're sending them into the community to work with the population to increase awareness of rights. And they're also working to disseminate and produce materials related to maternal health rights. And so these are the activities that they have outlined, and then we are in the process right now of helping them to implement these activities. A second objective that they identified was to improve interactions between healthcare providers and women and families. So this is challenging. And first of all, they are working together to advocate, especially at the national level with the Ministry of Health and also the regional and district level ministries of health, to reinforce the number of healthcare providers in facilities. And this is challenging, as there are limited resources in Burkina Faso, as we're all well aware. However, if there is the political will, if there is the support at the grassroots level, we're confident that things can change at the national level, and that they can get more health providers into these facilities. Also, we're providing training to healthcare providers on interpersonal and intercultural skills. It's very difficult for healthcare providers working in these facilities because they rarely receive on continuing education or further training. They're often left fairly isolated. So we're providing training in those areas to help them improve the way that they interact with women and families. And also, we're training them in counseling women on maternal and newborn health issues. Finally, we are organizing a process for the community to be involved in monitoring health facilities. And a lot of this really requires working with the Ministry of Health and working with the Ministry of Health to give the community legitimacy, so that they can go to the Ministry of Health and report things when things aren't going well. So in conclusion, what I guess I'd like you to take away from this is that women in Tenkodogo District and in many areas of Africa and the rest of the world face multiple challenges in exercising their rights related to maternal and newborn health. And lack of awareness of these rights and lack of satisfaction with services contribute heavily to preventing women from exercising their rights. So this current program will work to address these issues, but these types of things need to be happening all over for women throughout the world to achieve their rights related to maternal and newborn health. So thank you. And I think we have a couple minutes for questions. Is that correct? All right. Any questions?
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that they tend to differ significantly in that healthcare providers tend to be more educated, certainly, than the population. And sometimes they are part of the same culture and sometimes they aren't. As there are many different cultures in Africa, and I'm sure also in Mexico and the regions in which you work, sometimes they have the same cultural background, and sometimes this isn't the case. But even when they have the same cultural background, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy, that that they can communicate and work together well. So, I think the bigger thing is really the interpersonal communication, regardless of the cultural background. Because a lot of times, I think that, the healthcare providers, they don't have that background. They don't know, they haven't focused really on how to work with women in that way in their education previously. I think the cultural issues play a factor, and also just being overworked. I think that's a huge thing. So obviously the training isn't just going to fix it. It really is supporting them so that they can have the patience and the time that they need to work with women. Because healthcare providers also mentioned that, that they really don't have the time, to work with women the way that they need to. So I guess that wasn't completely on the cultural part, but did that answer your question to a certain extent? Okay, thank you. I guess the training program particularly, it really has, there's real life examples. So just how you talk to women, approaching them with empathy, not when you counsel them, don't just criticize what they're doing, but build on what they're doing. So praise them for the things that they're doing well and help them see the things that they can change, but help them identify that themselves so they don't feel attacked. And with the way that they're treated generally and with their bodies, just making sure that they have the privacy that they need and things like that. Thanks.